President. How are you today?
Golly, you've been so busy. I have been to see you around much.
We had a nice meeting.
I see you at a dinner now.
And yes.
It, you missed the last meeting. Sit over here.
Fine.
Yep, Mark. Son, you're on the subway. Kenny, you got over Jesus or whatever you have.
I like the chicken pot. Yes, sir. I think I'm all.
You got a little late in line.
I sure did. Well, my daughters felt they had to share it with me. They didn't want me to miss out, so.
We're going to have a cabinet meeting next week, but on a number of general things. But you have a number of, you know, the your stuff is so basically not in the cabinet. That is not something going into in the cabinet. I thought we ought to take them around a little.
Good.
Good idea. What I generally try to do is, like I saw Morgan out in California, I said, he had, for example, Alaska Pipeline, or that's something that's not, shouldn't be in the county. He's got to carry it out in the Indians, and so I talked to him. And so we, whenever you've got things that you feel are, shall we say, independent of, or particularly your dish as compared to others, then we should have a talk about it. Sometimes you want to elevate it to cabinet two. When I say elevate it, not that it isn't important where it is, you may want to just bring it up in a cabinet meeting. In other words, if it involves something that other departments would be interested in, and so forth and so on. And most of the time, in fact, many times it should be, or in the meeting with the meeting that you have with Economic Boy, Schultz, and so forth and so on. The more we can get it done there, the better. First, let me say that I realize you took a lot of heat on our friend George, but it was predictable. I mean, and there'll be more from time to time. But the fact of the matter is, as you recognize and as you said, is that as you know, we've had to roll butts pretty hard on a couple of things lately. And as I looked over those option papers and those various things, you won more than half. You've been a very effective advocate for your point of view, and I want you to know that I want you to fight for what you think, and I'll give great weight to your recommendations when it comes in.
Thank you.
Many times I read down the thing and I say, "Oh, these men are," and I see Brennan over here, but. Tell me on this youth differential thing. I thought that actually we made a rather modest proposal there, and yet apparently he just hit the roof on it. What he gets stirred up about it?
Well, I think he's made up his mind that he wouldn't buy this on any condition. One of the fears he has is that this will open the door for employers to hire more youth than adults. There are some adults unemployed and adults with very little skill, especially in minorities, lack of education, and they would be shunned aside for the youth who would get 80-85% of the minimum. Now, he also is using 70 already, which doesn't stand up, that this is going back to child labor, slave days. Now, we know the days he's preparing for the gone, we don't have the factories in the sun up to sundown, but this is what he's using.
Right. They're pretty strong so far. I understand that the previous administration, they have always skipped around the youth differential thing. I mean, I think it's, what is the situation on that?
Well, they never proposed it, though, as a, they never
it
proposed
it. It's an
administration. Some people brought it up to the administration.
What's going to happen?
Well, they think that they're going to get it by. They think they're going to get it by their way, not with the $2.50 an hour. But they think they're going to get it by with the youth differential dropped, and that they're going to get it by with coverage for municipal or public employees, and maybe domestic.
This is me.
This is me. Working with some of the
Well,
they have some support out there. Of course,
sure.
They'll have opposition. How much? At the present time, we don't know. We're trying to get a reading, and there's been great support since I've been out there with us on both sides, but. There is a feeling that they may get a bill through. Well, I'm trying to avoid that. I'd like to have a bill through that we don't have to put you on the spot.
So yeah.
I don't want you to have to veto it. I don't want you to have to veto it or
you're exactly right. You and when you do meet with them, you just ought to say that you and I have talked about this thing, and then look here, you can all have it, you can blast off. Everybody can have their own way here, you know.
Well, you see, I think he's more embarrassed now, because I said I wouldn't attack him, and I said they all understood when I took this job that I would. I have certain moral and ethical beliefs of my own, and one of them is that I at least can be heard, and I'm being heard. I'm talking to the president and indirectly to people I trust to carry a message to the president. And some of my views were accepted and some were not. Now, as part of a team, I have to accept that. If the president doesn't agree with me, I don't say to him, well, I quit, because this is ridiculous. On the other hand, if I could speak to the president, or I could give my views, of course, then I'd have to, because I wouldn't be part of the team. It'd be ridiculous for me to be there. I couldn't help the president, I couldn't help the
people. You can be sure your views are going to end. In fact, everybody's new, because I'm from Hawaii. When I was in San Clemente, and all the papers came up, and I was meeting with you, I went
through
every line. That's when John called me back.
Well, Mr. President, see, the thing I'm looking at is that I'm not in the account at all for organized labor. I think I told you that when I accept the job, I leave that behind. I have to worry about everybody. Non-union people are the biggest. But I am concerned, as I promise you, with the next 3.5 years, that you have to go to, you can do the things you'd like to do at home with all the pressure. I'd like to be able to help you to take some of them pressures off. And we've been doing good up to now. And I think this is what you're struggling with. Oh, we've been making mileage like mad. And even businessmen come to me and say,
sir, because of this flat.
Well, this has opened up a schism here, not as much as it could go, and headed off.
What's the heart of it? Is it the youth differential?
The youth differential is one, and of course the public employees. Now, I've explained to public employees that I thought the position taken by the administration was had some
problem
for this
reason. Probably got there. Frankly, I like public employees. I'd rather deal with a good union than I would with this scatterbrain thing. You know, I'd rather work like a postman. If you give us a good postman, we make the deal.
Yes.
I've told him that, and he knows it. The problem you've got here is that the state and local governments get a great deal of help.
Yes, sir. They really give you the business.
We've got to work with these governments. This is the union. They're asking how to get on the government.
Well, they have a law that permits it. We recognize it.
Go ahead, Tom.
Well, actually, the argument I've given them with the administration is that your move now to decentralize things and send it back to local government, this kind of clashes with that. But two of the things I raised as an argument, more or less, was that the federal government didn't include the states when they passed the Civil Rights Act, and they didn't include the states when they passed the Discrimination of Age Act. But then I'm aware that both of these are an economic issue. Because they could be, but in most cases they wouldn't, because if you're talking about a man being black or white, or a woman being black and white, or a Protestant or a Catholic or anything else, they can still do the job. You're not talking about somebody getting more money because of their color or so forth. And as far as age would be the same thing, a man 45 could probably be as good as a man 40 in certain jobs. But when you get into the minimum wage, you are then saying to a state, we're not going to give you the money for this increase you have to pay, but you have to pay it. And then the state says, we may have to raise the taxes, and this becomes an argument against your administration. So I felt I had to defend you in that position. And,
yeah,
and I did. Well, they just felt, and of course, the meeting made a mistake. He said, I carry the Chamber of Commerce at all. Well, Chamber of Commerce attacked me the next day. So that worked. So I wonder what took him so long.
Yeah. Matter of fact, Chamber of Commerce is a whole lot more disturbed than me.
Okay.
Really?
See, you want
well,
the issue
well, that's what I said. You want more than half. And as a matter of fact, I looked it over, and not only the chamber, but the NAM boys that are really screaming. But that's what I want. I want to be basically a down the middle. Everybody.
I want both sides.
Both sides.
I think that would do the right thing.
If you do the right thing. But also, I want. It's like with Buzz with the farmers. He's not winning many these days. Price is too high, but he has to keep his credibility with the farmers by saying, look, I'm fighting for what you want, but on the end, you're going to win them all. I mean, we gotta do that, and I don't know, we'll do the best we can. Let me ask you a couple of things if we can. The situation we ride over together, and we go in together. Would that be all right? In other words, and they'll introduce the President of the United States and Secretary Brennan, and we walk in together, and I greet them, and then probably you would stay.
Believe me, he's going to be there. He wasn't supposed to be there. He's supposed to be in New Orleans. I understand he switched.
Right. Well, that's all right.
So I checked out. Somebody said he was going to be there to start blasting again. And then I'm told now, no, he was going to be there in respect that you were going to be there. Now, this may be so, but I'm meeting with the said, no.
You should tell him that I'm going to be very conciliatory and so forth, but that a public confrontation is not going to.
Well, the group you will be.
It's going to hurt him. It's not going to help him.
Mr. President, the group you will be speaking to. Most of them are not simply what it means, because they call me. They just thought his attack on me personally was wrong.
What?
They
it was like that one he made on me in Miami.
Right.
That's right. Didn't help him.
Not with the military. They resent it. Now, many of my friends are in town already for this conference, and they've been calling me, and I don't want to start anything.
Right.
A lot of them are already saying, well, maybe you want to get out, he's senile, he's going to attack his friends, he's going to accuse people of selling out.
Well, he hasn't entered out of his speaking position, Mr. Williams. Meaning the sharpest attack, holy stuff, and so forth. But between us, a certain rigidity, let's not say senility, does set in with some older people, all older people. And I saw it happen to De Gaulle. I saw it happen at Eisenhower. I saw it happen to the neighbor.
And it can happen so quick.
And I mean, by that, by rigidity, De Gaulle and Eisenhower, both of them, I knew when they were in the 1970s. And I knew Eisenhower was in the 80s. We're just as sharp mentally then as they have been when I did the merger. But all of the flexibility had gone out. And that's George Meany's problem, I think. At times he's flexible. Don't you think that's
your
problem? Well, I've never wanted him to say that, so I never want him to feel it. Because I respect him, as you know, he's a strong fighter and all the rest. But Meany has his greatness in the past, but knew that he could be sort of flexible. And he cannot figure now that just get out and take an old hard line. It's us or them. That isn't going to work anymore. It isn't going to help the labor movement.
It's not going to help the labor.
The building trades are in good repute with this country, right? Because you know the building trades work with the construction industry and getting that labor thing done on a voluntary basis before we ever had any control. That was a good deal. And the building trades are, of course, very. What's meaning from the building trades?
Right, and of course, the building trades, I have to tell you, they don't always agree with a lot of the policy of the Evo-Cerno, especially the radical things. So they're a different type of breed. And because of this, they're accused of not caring. They do care, but they're a little more balanced people. Now, I think some of the things you could say just is, number one, they were great supporters of yours on Vietnam and all the way down.
I thought I did that.
The parade running in New York was 75% building trades blocks. So if they're right at the end of it, I think just to mention that and repeat your thanks and again to tell them how proud you are as you brought the field of the sun. They like this. They're fine.
I thought of it, if nothing, I thought of that connection. I thought I'd make a plea for strong national defense.
That would get support.
Because you see, basically, a lot of people who say, well, we'll cut the budget, the thing to do is to cut the defense budget so we can do more spending on it. We can't cut the defense budget. I think I should tell them that and ask for strong.
That's unfortunate.
All right. Those are the only two. Now come to the domestic things. What should I say about that?
Well, the domestic problems that some of them.
I plan to say one thing, of course. I'm going to say, I thought I would say in a personal sense that it means there that we, as this administration has the open door policy and so forth and so on a little bit. I thought in a personal sense I'd say something about you. I think it's very important that I do that. You fight hard for within the cabinet, that you're the most articulate spokesman for the viewpoints of labor that I've seen in the many years I've been in the cabinet. I think I'll just say that. But that all right? That's not well, that hurt you.
No, that wouldn't hurt me, and I think you could even mention that this is a problem with the procedure that's been done in the labor movement, where we, as I said to the press, we fight amongst ourselves, and when we take a vote, if I'm in the minority, I have to support the majority, and I may be the biggest fighter in the majority when it gets out where we have to fight. But that's democracy, and that's the way we operate. I have to do this as part of your team. I have my opportunity to debate. My question is either with you or somebody who you trust to carry back to you. And if I feel I'm being given this opportunity fairly, my story is being brought back to you as the man to make the judgment, then I have no complaint that I'm not. if somebody was depriving me of this and I was not getting it, then I don't belong here.
I'll make that point.
And I think this point is good compared because they do it every day. Now, the other thing they're concerned with is the some of them are uptight yet about the CSRC, which is the control group, you know, their wages. I think this, the general presence are happy with it because it keeps a lot of pressure on them. It's good, I think, for the economy, and I think it's good for these men themselves if they understood it because they've, some of them have gone so sky high in their cost, the price of that. That's why they have non-union competition and the problems developing around the country. I think, without getting into that, the touch that the administration looking over the whole ball game now, we're concerned with fairness to all workers, including the construction. The other thing that they've been uptight, that they've been looking for 20 years, which President Eisenhower supported, and President Truman, and President Kennedy, and President Johnson, and I know you were the days of the Eisenhower, that's the size picking, right? This has been one that's been discriminating against them, that they cannot defend themselves under the tariff fighting law. They get involved in secondary boycotts and everything else, so they pick it if somebody else refuses to cross the picket line. Because the building trades, not having one employer for a job, the general contractor sublets maybe the 20 contractors, subcontractors. So one does the brick, one does the paint, one does the electric. So if the electrician has a problem against the electrical contractor, and he's forced to pick it or protest, and the others back him up, the electrician's in trouble because they're not allowed to help him. Now, this was a plan. This was a one factory where everybody worked for the one boss. They could do that. There'd be no problem. So it's a little discriminatory. It's been recognized and almost got corrected until Adam Powell, who was then head of the committee, played games with everybody and got it messed up. And we had worked it out with the old CIO, so there was no screams there to put anybody politically on the spot. Now, this is one that's going to be asking for a meeting here. They come down for every year. I think
that we had a process.
That hasn't been up since 1969, I think.
Well, it's been way dormant now.
We have anything.
And we, I would have to review our position on that.
Yeah, the main point is this, that take a look at it. And I think the if the position can be developed so that Pete can, in other words, if he can take the lead on the thing. Now, understand, it's a very controversial Congress, you know. But on the other hand, it's just something. I'd like to see a little bit of people behind here.
So that was
George has always been, for that.
Oh, he is. What I'm suggesting, Mr. President, we beat them at their own game, that I don't want you to make any commitment to them or to say anything other than if you feel you should, that many things that we've talked about, you and I, and one thing that you know is very dear to my heart is the site is picking for the construction. This will set them right off. And all then, that if you so feel that you look at paper over that, perhaps you'd want to look at this and see what merits it or something that, without committing yourself. I don't want you to make any commitment. I don't want you to get involved.
The difficulty with my opening it up is that if I open it up, I don't want to get in a position where I don't go through with it, they're going to meet how long?
Well, that'll be here about 4 days. And they've had this thing pretty well moving up until 6 years.
Yeah, get me something on it. And, all right, well, my general feeling here is this, though, rather than mine, I might mention that these things have been discussed, that if we could get a position, if we're going to get a position, rather than my doing it, you do it. In other words, you make so that you get the, you say, I'm not going to be able to do it. I said, I don't know what we'll do on it yet. I want to take a look at the pros and cons to see what the Timmons group says we can get through now in there. But, and get, get a readout from
my only reason
from the Congress boys.
Raising this is that building trades group as a whole around the country, the best group we got out to support your re-election
began. All the way.
And they were very helpful all over the country, and they're still very strong following you. I talked to them, they're very strong following on the budget. There's still some strong support on the defense. There, you'll have no problem. It's good to open it up to that. You'll get them right up with your mat. And your thanks for their support on Vietnam. They're still very emotional over helping the POWs. And I think a good thing to do is, if you feel that you agree with me, to say that you and I have an understanding to help these veterans to rehabilitate them and get them jobs. And
I'll
help them.
I appreciate the leadership of the Secretary of Labor. has taken to provide jobs for all of our veterans, not just the people.
The cooperation they
all of our veterans, and the empowerment of the building trades for those jobs.
They have been helping, they've been giving us training. And that is dear to my heart, and I know how you feel. And they feel very, very close, because so many of our own men were involved with the war, and their sons, and as you know, you met Mike Donovan, who lost his boy over there. We have quite
Mike,
a few.
Yeah. What's his last name?
Donovan.
Donovan.
Now, all the, he'll probably be there.
He's down on the right side of the table. I remember him sat at the table down at the end. I never forget his face. It's 4 years ago.
Now, one thing these little things, just touching, but I'll make a comment. At least they know what they've been discussing.
Main thing is to get across is that we have I appreciate their support, not politically, but their support on free issues. The second, we want to work together on building a strong America and a strong economy. We want a strong trade union, the free trade needs to be moving in this country. And Secretary Wade is my counselor in this area. He is an articulate advocate, and his views, I'm sure you. Also, I want you gentlemen to know, but I want to hear your views. I mean, the door of this office is open, and all the time, so that they can know that.
And what you said before is always good to throw when we talk to them, is that we may not always be able to agree with you or you with us, but we try to work it out and try to wait. This way they know that
so that I'm
listening, but you're not promising them that they're
going to be able to. And I'll take that, I'll say that, and I'll sort of maybe smile through me, and then sometimes we disagree. That's all right.
No.
We've got to keep them in line, too, you know what I mean? They'll appreciate that when we're going in and saying, look, Paul, we're going to get here. Because they know very well I can't.
They know they're not.
And they know they shouldn't have it.
And they know you can't.
That's right.
Other people you have to take.
I can never deliver it because why I got my other. So if you think this paper is all the labor, you can see what some of the business people have gotten this wire. Burning our tail.
See, some of them don't believe that. They think, well, but I get it. And I can tell them everything. Doing that.
I think you're doing great.
We don't want to get into a room, Bob. I told him we got to accomplish things for the country. And I want at this time because the Industrial Peace Commission has been named. Dave Coleman is seeing me. He was upset. He said, I can't understand, Joe. He said, you know, Dave's been around a long time and knows me. He said, I just don't understand this attack. He said, is you develop credibility around here very quick with business always. I mean, great respect and, for what the president did appointing you.
Let me tell you one thing, son. I hope you know this is a curious thing. The fact that media attack you helps us reassure business and get through some of these more progressive things. You get my point?
Yes.
Because they'll say, by golly,
that's right.
Maybe you see the point. What you do, Ken, is to ensure that the damage from others that always throw back, look, Mimi's attacking us for being too pro-business. Just as well, we have to do that.
Money that they've been getting from OEO.
and still others can go on with money from the particular local community. Now, if we can, I'm sure, make funds available so that this can continue, but I need to look into it in detail. I'm not sure.
Well, I'm not my manpower check why the money went to the areas of Massachusetts where they don't have a coffee farm, like Newton, which is very rich.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
Why they went out and this area went down, and then, of course, with the announcement the day I was there, that the Navy Yard was going to close down, and the Army Office, oh boy, I get hit with that. But I want to say this, Mr. President, both the mayor and the governor were very understanding, which was good. They said, look, we can understand what the president's up against. We understand his budget problem. This was even Mayor White who was kind of...
I'm glad he's saying that to you. I wish he was saying that to the paper.
I said, you know, Kevin, I said, because I knew his uncle well for many years, was in the labor movement. As you know, Kevin, time has come for us to work as Americans. And if you agree with me, privately, the president's right, it wouldn't do any harm for you to say this. Forget about, you know, maybe you want to use it to run for office. I think if we straighten out the country to run for office, you get elected, but we have to do this now.
Yeah, why actually is, you know, been sort of a bridesmaid, never a bride for so many years. He'd be better off if he weren't quite so partisan. You know what I mean? And then he might make it for governor one day, you know, because he's what he wants. Is
what I could tell him up there, I said, I'm sure that whatever my department doing, I'm sure we would have the blessing of the president to help them. Any unemployment created by the closing of the Navy Yard, we would look to see what we do to help them. I personally would talk to my friends in the labor movement of building trades that we could absorb some of these men as we did in New York, the Brooklyn Navy Yard. But I said, I'm not familiar with it, and I'm not the Secretary of Defense, so I don't want to get into his department especially. But they were, as I say, they were calm, they were very concerned, but they weren't blasting the unit and get into any. They realized these things have to happen with the winding down of the war and so forth.
Yeah.
I just mentioned that because
you should be closing, as you know, we're going to have a real problem because we're going to close 45, or cut back 45 bases around the country. And it'll raise some hell, but on the other hand, you just can't keep them open if they're no use for the government.
If you have one ace to hold, so the people that are going to attack you, the people that attack me won't long. So what I'm saying, Mr. Senator, fine, you want the president to end the war, right? He did that. You want him to cut a defense budget. He's trying to do that to still defend the country. How do you cut a defense budget? You cut out the facts, so we don't need bases, we don't need ships. And where do you go? Well, they have no place to go. And I think this is what you have to give them.
Yeah, good.
You're doing everything you can to still keep a strong defense.
Construction.
We're training him out of his body. We're going to send him to Canada to work. Well, he was in a hell of a spot. What he was saying, he was trying to play up to the people in the environment, the ecologists. Okay, don't build plants in New York State. Don't have any nuclear plants. They're dangerous. Where the professionals were saying they're not. And we built the biggest Indian plant in New York. So he was saying we'd buy it off Canada and have them bring it down through the grid system and so forth. Well, we knocked the hell out of that. Right now, I was able to knock them out on the jobs, number one. Plus, if we ever had a falling out with Canada, they could shut us off wherever we be.
Yeah.
Now, I think if that comes up again in the pipeline, Mr. President, you're in the same position. Say, look, number one, I'm President of the United States. My obligations to the Americans, to the workers, to the businessmen. And if we go through a foreign country, although it's a friendly country, we do not control this country. We have a good argument there for your opposition worried about how wide the trench is and all that much. Now, we are, in the construction business, we're pretty good at doing things so you don't even know what was done. We could build through there and put that back, you wouldn't even know you had a pipeline.
Of course.
There's no reason that the...
You know, another thing, too, is this, that... looking at Canada, sure, it's a friendly country, but you can have unfriendly governments in friendly countries. Trudeau's no friend of ours.
No, but you have some real radicals up there.
Yeah.
Why don't they sabotage the pipeline? We can't protect, we have to depend on them. Suppose they decide they want, they need the oil, they want to share the source, or they want to raise the tax. It's like the old days with the grass and range, you know, Texas. Well, if you want to get to my water, all you pay me a buck in head.
Right.
And, you know, how do we stop this? Right. Without getting into an international...
Well, we're all, and incidentally, the environmental business in Canada, it doesn't make, in Alaska, it doesn't make any what happens to that crap up there. You've ever been, you've been to Alaska, there's nothing there. And the fact that the reindeer, whatever they have, aren't going to have snow and all. If it been, the environmentalists had had this, had their way, America would still be a primitive country with no development, you know?
Well, this is a
part
I get. I've had these fights in New York and won on them and got quoted three times in the Times in a row with a quote of the day. And one of them was just what you're saying, Magnus. We were fighting for housing and a road to downtown to speed up the traffic. And a fellow pushed on the spot. Moses is one of the great geniuses of our time. In fact, he's been in touch with me. If you need him, you know, he's another old fellow, but he's still sharp. He's anxious your program about Vietnam. He thinks it's great.
Put him down for.
Yes, sir.
That'll be good. They'll know that he was in the office. Thursday, which is on Easter. It'd be a nice touch to invite each undersecretary. It'd give them a feeling that, at this point, what we do in a case like that, is you will have all the cabinet people at the table, and in the back row, instead of having staff people, with the undersecretaries. What do you think of that tonight?
Sounds very good.
That way, first they get a feeling of being in the cabinet room, which most of them do, and then they can go back and then the light beacon and say, now, look, you were there. We don't do it about once, it should be done more than about once a year. This would be a good thing.
Right.
Our all undersecretary job's filled now.
No, sir, the undersecretary of commerce job is not filled yet.
It isn't.
No.
My call is not denied, he's been announced for.
Been announced, but not confirmed. Well, he could still come.
That's right, we could have.
He could still come. And you may yet have an undersecretary.
We don't have a commerce thing.
Oh, I could see what the status is.
I would say, if we miss only commerce, let's go ahead anyway.
All right.
But you check it out with her and see if they need to go.
All right.
But I'd rather think that this would be a good time to have them all.
Mr. President, one other thing you should be aware of that may concern. I'm discussing now, Fred Dent is uptight, he's being fresh, and Fred, by the way, is a great guy.
He is.
He's
a sweet guy.
Him and I work up now very close, we're going to bring in, I suggest him when we first come to board, that he bought it right away, and that's going to bring in a dozen visitors. Every month, maybe take him to Blair House, we try to feed him. No agenda, just talk, and do this every month. He agrees we're going to do. He's agreed that, but he's uptight over something that we've already worked out on the unemployment insurance bill, and that is where Georgia said to me, "You do not want to include the states that have a payment of strikers." So we're trying. And this is another one close to meeting side because he did it in New York. It's New York and Rhode Island. So we're putting in the two states that under the new program they would not get it unless they. To pay the strikers. But in there, we also said, take the innocents, which is one of the problems with the local law, that if a strike is called by one union, one group in a plant, that they lock out everybody else and they cannot get the benefits either as a lockout or as a victims of a strike. Now, we're saying that, okay, we don't pay the striker, but we should pay the people who are unemployed due to a strike they have no control over. Conway seems to think this is going to open up a can of worms, so it is made, but I think in all fairness, this is the position we're taking.
That will affect only two states.
That it's only two states, but that we feel that there's a lockout. If I'm fighting with him, there's no reason to hurt you. But that's what happened. You become a victim because I locked the plan down. You're willing to go to work, but you can't. So you don't get unemployment insurance and you're forced on to be unemployed through no fault of your own. We're saying that that person is a victim and should be paid unemployment, not the guy who voted to go on strike. So this is coming up then. We've been talking
about the gray area.
Yes, sir. This is.
We're working on the language.
That's my understanding. Yeah.
We're going to meet today. This just came up. And my people are. We don't meet. We have to understand.
The very tough.
Fred got this.
You well know the. Some of the congressmen raising that they have. Last night they say, for God's sake, sir, don't know what about this side of money for strikers and so forth. And I said, well, I don't think anybody's contemplating that. But there is a gray area, I guess.
There is a gray area, which the Secretary mentioned, where some people are affected because of a strike, but they are not on strike themselves. They're out of work. They're not drawing any wages or anything, and yet they need some kind of coverage.
And that feels like it would be...
Well, he's getting supplies. They're objective. Now, my feeling is that, number one, we won't get labor's 100% support of it, but they won't fight us 100%. Because they're not all involved, it's only two states. But because it's Meany's baby, and his state, Meany's going to try to put on a real battle. My feeling is that we can say to you, as a man with some compassion, so you try to say, he don't care. I'm saying you do care, that you have compassion. You can't go around and see everybody's individual. I'm there to do it, so are other people. But if we can show them that the fellow or the woman who is an innocent victim, that you're trying to help them, and we are all of them, the fellow who does take upon himself a strike knows what he's doing, therefore he takes the consequences. And the victim has to wait a week under the law, or 7 to 10 days as it is. But if they're penalized, like in New York, they have to wait 13 weeks like the strike. Now, after 13 weeks in New York, that's when the strike gets his unemployment. But the victim has to wait wait 13 weeks also, which is wrong. They should get it after the first 7 days, just as if they were unemployed because they were laid off. Now, it's a humane thing. It's the right thing to do. And in there we say, so that we don't protect anybody that's wrong, we say in our recommendation labor fund, if there is any proof that the person who was a victim of the strike had anything to do with the strike, either lent to it, supported it physically or financially, even though they're not involved, then they should get paid. They helped to bring it about. We have that safeguards in there, so that somebody who says, well, I'm a victim, or we can prove that they were victims, but they helped to create it by supporting some other group. We have that safety guard in there to show business that, look, we're just not letting somebody have some conspiracy there. We're paying one group to conspire with the other. We think we have that protection in there, as we put it in. One of the things we'd be happy to hear, I must tell you, I was up at that parade. And,
I read about the parade.
Well, the parade was
terrific. I couldn't believe the damn New York Times playing on the front page.
Well, yeah. you would have felt great to see how these fellows reacted to the end of the veterans for the...
Oh, no, against the war.
Against the war came up. Now, they permitted them to march as veterans group, which probably was smart. I had some job at the building trade. They wanted to go to work. Long hair, the cops were upset. The police come and said, we're glad you're here, Mr. Brennan. He goes, these men won't listen to anybody else. And they want to put them on the parade. I said, look, let them march. We know what we'll handle. So what we did went up, and these 1,000 men in uniform plus the reviewing stand. When this group got to about 50 feet from the stand, everybody, just like a ballet, turned their back completely around like a revolver door and stood that way. Well, that was as much a slap. They screamed, don't turn your back on us. So TV picked it up, and they screamed, and the woman and the people across the street called them bums and everything else. But the viewers stand and their peers, all of them
had
their back. And they were screaming. And the police moved in good with the horses and so forth, kept them moving. But they were the they screamed, because this was a big insult that everybody
could have done. Yep.
I spoke at the banquet and I had them screaming on their feet. I said, you did the right thing, you turned your back. I said, there's a mayor in this town who said they were the real heroes, the draft dodgers. I said, but if they're heroes, why don't they come back like heroes and take their punishment instead of looking at them? They got up on the floor, they screamed about 20 minutes. We had this fun, but the thing I was good, and I don't want to hold you up.
You're not
holding. I'm sitting there with a congressional medal on one of the two prisoner wars. I know this kid, John. He lost his legs, the power of his legs by attacking a pillbox over there, and mine went off, and he killed a few Vietnamese. But a fine young man. In fact, he's been down here. One of his greatest things is someday to be able to meet you with his two daughters. And he said, can I get raised? I said, well, Ken, I said, this is rough, but I'll try. But while I was talking to him after the dinner, a young man came up. And he wanted to talk to me, and I thought you'd get a kick out of this, Mr. President. I stood up and met him. He was a corporal. He was in American uniform. He had a real heavy British accent. He was holding a long cigarette book. He said to me, Mr. Secretary, real heavy English, he said, I want you to know that I'm an English subject. I was proud to serve in the American Army in Vietnam. I think you got the greatest man in the world as president. And he went out with this heavy English accent, you know. And I was looking to make sure he's not kidding me. And the fellow who brought him up and touched me was one of the